Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You hang up being there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lease. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money from the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
All right. We're here in the aftermath of Hurricane Ian. And I say we're on Faith Street, so you're working on stuff outside in the background. And we're kind of running, we're on time, so. Anyway, let's play some intros. We're going to play them out of order, but we'll get to them.
I used to spend the night in hotel parking lots. What was I going to do? I ain't had nowhere to stay, so I lived in the car. I had $35. And I said, come on, God, man, I've been trying to make this dream come true. You done left me out here like this. And I was crying so hard that he just said, I didn't like hear a voice or nothing, but he spoke to me and however he said, if you get up, I'm going to take you places you ain't never been. Now, I was finna quit. So I said, skip it. I'm going to quit anyway. So I got in my car. I went to a payphone. And I was going to call my dad. You remember back in the day where you could punch in a code and call your answering machine and get your messages? So I called. And I punched in the code. And the dude said, doop. He said, hey, Steve, this is Chuck Sutton with Showtime at the Apollo. We saw a tape of you. You're very funny. If you could get here Sunday night, we'd love to put you on television. Call me back. Let me know if you can make it. So I hung the phone up. I'm crushed because my whole dream of being on TV, and I couldn't get to New York. I got $35. How am I going to get to New York? I can't make it. So I'm standing there at the phone booth and tears just coming down my face. I said, God, so that must be a sign for me to go home. Because this it. I ain't even got the money to go to the Apollo. My whole thing, I wanted to be on TV. I couldn't even make the dream come true. This is the most messed up moment. And so I said, man, let me call this dude back and see if he said this Sunday. Because maybe he said next Sunday and I could hustle up a little bit of money or something. I don't know what I'm going to do, but let me just call him back. So I call him back. Steve, this is Chuck Sutton, Showtime at the Apollo. We saw a tape of yours. You're very, very funny. Look, we have an opening Sunday night at Showtime at the Apollo. If you can make it, we'd love to put you on TV. I said, it's this Sunday. Before I hit the button, I heard, doop, you have another message. Now, it wasn't there before. So I punched my code in. I listened to the second message. It says, Steve Harvey, this is Tom Sober from the Comedy Caravan. This was a Thursday. He said, I have a gig in Jacksonville, Florida on Friday night that pays $150. If you can get there Friday night, you'll make $150. So I called him back. And I said, hey, Tom, did you get a gig away? He said, no, it's still available. He said, can you get there? I said, I'm in Pensacola, Florida. I'm 3.5 hours away. So I drive to Jacksonville, Florida, and that night I made the 150. The club owner said, man, you're funnier than the guy we hired. If you stay tomorrow night, I'm going to give you another $150. So now I got $300 now. So I get on the phone, I call Chuck Sutton, I say, hey man, is the gig still available at Showtime at the Apollo? He said, yeah, we got one opening left. I said, I'll be there. So I called Eastern Airlines, who used to be open back then. They had a special for $99 going from Jacksonville, Florida to New York round trip. So I parked my car at the airport. I got it. Got on plane, flew. Everything I had was in two bags. Got to the Apollo. I said, hey man, I'm here. I got there at 11 o'clock in the morning. He said, you can't stay here because you don't come on to the late show tonight. I said, man, I ain't got nowhere to go. I said, if you just let me stay in this building, man, I ain't going to move around nothing. I ain't got nowhere to go. I'm in Harlem. I can't go back out here. I got these two bags. I got victim wrote all over me, man. So he said, all right, if you go upstairs, don't come down. So he put me in a dressing room on the sixth floor. So that's where all the comedians were. So I stayed up there. I got hungry around 3 o'clock, man. I couldn't take it no more. So I went back downstairs, a dude named Alton Liston. I said, hey, man. He said, man, I thought I told you don't come down them damn steps. I said, hey, man, I'm just hungry, man. I said, let me go to that KFC I saw on the corner. Just let me get some chicken. I'll come right back. He said, man, if you ain't back in 20 minutes, you ain't getting in this building. So I went, bought me some chicken, came back. So the comedians started coming in the building. They started coming up on the sixth floor. So I meet this guy named D.L. Hughley. I introduce myself, he introduced himself. I'm sitting there, another guy come in named Dwayne Johnson. Then this other dude walked in named Jamie Foxx. And I introduce myself. We don't know each other, ain't none of us famous. It's 1991, man. They gave everybody the lineup. I was on the last show of the night. I don't go on to 11 at night. I done had this 4 pieces of chicken. I'm starving, man. That chicken done wore off. I'm nervous, man. I'm about to throw up. D.L. Hughley went downstairs. D.L. Hughley got booed off. Dwayne Johnson got booed off. Jamie Foxx went down there and got booed. They booed Jamie. Then Jamie started singing. And then they started clapping. And Jamie had their ass. Then he went back to them jokes. And they got his ass. So I'm walking down the steps and I see Jamie sitting on the steps. I said, hey, man, hang in there. He said, man, that ain't never happened to me before, man. This is crazy. This is Jamie Foxx, man, one of the most talented people in all of comedy. And now, you don't even know how nervous I am, man. I can't even. My breathing is shot because these dudes been booed. So I walk out. I had wrote this joke. Mike Tyson had got in a fight in Harlem with this heavyweight named Mitch Green. Mike Tyson had hit the dude in the eye in the store. Now, he was on the news. His eye was swollen. So the joke I wrote was they was interviewing Mitch Green, and he was telling everybody what happened, but his eye took over the interview. And I wrote this joke that his eye started talking and was just, I'll tell you what happened. The heavyweight champ's fist is coming towards my face. I just said, Lord, Lord, Lord. And I wrote this whole joke about this dude's eyeball talking. And when the punch came, and all this here, the Apollo, man, they went crazy. They lost their mind. I got a standing ovation, man. I walked off stage, man, just started crying. I couldn't believe it. And they paid me. I made $750 for being on TV for one night. I had never made $750 telling jokes in one night. And so that was my first television appearance. A couple weeks later, Sinbad was the host of the show. He got this job on Different World. And so he quit. And so Mark Curry became the host. And then Mark Curry got hanging with Mr. Cooper, and he quit. And they came to me and said, would you come back to New York and host Amateur Night for us to just try you out? Oh, ain't no problem. And so I went to New York. I hosted Amateur Night, and I was killing. But every time I went to commercial break, I was supposed to let the warm-up act take over like Ruben does. But I knew not to let the warm-up act do that because he would change the attitude of the crowd because Apollo was a wild place. So I stayed out there. I did the warm-up and the hosting. And I created a bond with that audience. And that's how I got on TV. It was my very first TV show. I hosted Showtime at Apollo. I ended up being the longest-running host in the history of Showtime. I did that show for 8 years. Nobody ever did it for 8 years. And that was my turn-back moment. See, in your life, everybody has a turn back moment. You have a moment where you can go forward or you can give up. But the thing you have to keep in mind before you give up is that if you give up, the guarantee is it will never happen. That's the guarantee of quitting, that it will never happen, no way under the sun. The only way the possibility remains that it can happen is if you never give up no matter what. Because God is always coming. He's never too late. At your worst moment, look, man, when they told me I had to be in New York, I saw no way I could get there. But that God, though, he make the phone ring. I end up in Florida. I make $300. Then I go to New York. I make $750. Almost got $1,000 out of nowhere. That's what happened to me. That was my moment of never giving up. That's when I first learned that faith was everything, that you have to remain faithful. Now learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And he messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the dough. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the dough? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt. I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way. Your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box going to get sent back to sender. And now you're going to have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
because I used to observe that a lot of those shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there and looking for jobs, that's usually why we move, and the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do.
But we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be. Super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that if you, sometimes you are right alongside of a railroad track. You see a train's passing as you're driving.
That is true.
Down a super highway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build those shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions, took them out, took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know that know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done. I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. They would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses. They could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. But I've been in some of them, and there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and big, because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with their hands.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Phil, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, "Shoot it!" So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarion Styles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarion can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
People keep talking about how the world is going to come to an end. People keep talking about how the world is going to come to an end. People keep talking about how the world is going to come to an end. And I wonder, in these days and these times, if anybody... People keep talking about how society is falling down today. And as hard as I try not to listen just to what them folks got to say, but you know, I just can't help but look around and see we digging our own grave. And there's just one thing I want to know. Can anybody be saved?
Is anybody gonna
gonna be saved? Is anybody gonna be saved? Oh, say it again.
I'm not afraid. For you and me to devise some kind of method or strategy to offset some of the events or repetition of the events that have taken place here in Los Angeles recently, we have to go to the root. We have to go to the cause. Dealing with the condition itself is not enough, and it is because of our effort toward getting straight to the root that people oftentimes think we are dealing in hate. We are oppressed. We are exploited. We are downtrodden. We are denied not only civil rights, but even human rights. So the only way we're going to get some of this oppression and exploitation away from us or aside from us is come together against a common enemy. Who taught you to hate the texture of your hair? Who taught you to hate the color of your skin to such extent that you bleach to get like the white man? Who taught you to hate the shape of your nose and the shape of your lips? Who taught you to hate yourself from the top of your head to the soles of your feet? Who taught you to hate your own kind? Who taught you to hate the race that you belong to? So much so that you don't want to be around each other. No, before you come asking Mr. Muhammad, does he teach hate, you should ask yourself, who taught you to hate being what God gave you? And I, for one, as a Muslim, believe that the white man is intelligent enough. If he were made to realize how black people really feel and how fed up we are without that old compromising sweet talk. Stop sweet talking it. Tell him how you feel. Tell him how, what kind of hell you've been catching, and let him know that if he's not ready to clean his house up, if he's not ready to clean his house up, he shouldn't have a house. It should catch on fire and burn down.
All right, well, it's today, well, my part of Florida, and what's today's podcast here? Faith Street, Hurricane Ian. Okay, yesterday, Hurricane Ian came through my part of, I guess, Central Florida, you would call it, came through here about this time, 24 hours ago, was drizzle on and off. Quiet. Then in the afternoon, you know, you had some wind gusts. It arrived. And the surprise, well, where I am, and I posted some pictures up on our Facebook page, which is It's My House TV. That's our Facebook page, It's My House TV. I posted some pictures. The house where I'm at, intact. Roof, intact. Now, I did post some pictures. The only thing that was a loss, and I got somebody taking that down right now, was the carport. But we're going to, God's taking it down, and then we're going to recycle, sell that for scrap. So other than that, other than the carport and some branches, you know, laying on the ground, you know, particularly the driveway, and that stuff can be dried out and recycled into biofuels to heat your home or cook a meal or something like that. But other than that, the privacy fence all stayed up. But the main thing, the house, the roof, all not even a leak, man. Not even a leak. I mean, I haven't discovered any yet, but so far, so good. So now, in other parts of the town where I'm at, I understand it hit harder. And there were about 30,000 residents of the town I'm in where, you know, customers of the same municipal power company. They had no electricity, they had no power, at least 30,000. You know, it was interesting, it went from, they had 13, then it went down without power, I guess sometime during the day yesterday, then it went down to 11, and then it went up to at least 30,000. But here and in my neighbors, you know, within eyeshot of where I'm at, the front yard, and probably the backyard too. Hey man, the elect didn't miss not one moment of power. So, I was good on water from the get go because we have our own well system, and I had, you know, stuck. Well, had enough of that already. I got water bricks and all that, so I was good on that anyway. But anyway, so the cleanup in this neck of the woods already began. Didn't have to go to a shelter. There was one, the closest one to me was like 2 miles away. Just go around the corner, go up 2 miles, and then make a right. And then it was a school that they turned. But there was no need to go there. So that's, you know, I'm really shocked. The biggest shocker for me was, you know, the power stayed on. Whereas other people in Florida, I think over a million people statewide lost power. All right, over a million people statewide. And I got a statistic on that, too. Florida is the number one state when it comes to power outages. I think we get at least 2 million of those a year. But I've got it posted on our Facebook page, It's Miles TV. But in any event, and I think I have a video on there too. I think I posted. I took two videos. I did an Instagram and a Facebook Live this morning. I haven't done an Instagram Live or a Facebook Live in months. Me personally, I've been on other people, but now, so anyway, I posted that up on the page too. And I did a quick little walk around. So that's my report, at least from my personal experience. I've been through three, I think this is my word, let's see, one, two, yeah, third hurricane I've been in. But of course I've been in, when you count out of state, cause the one that came through Ida, I haven't been in New Orleans in a while, but, got a couple houses in New Orleans and man, I had to go through, I was far away, but was the building still standing, this, that, or the other? So in the last 3 years, I've physically been in one, but been involved in two. So anyway, that's my faith. You know what? It was a Faith Street moment because anyway, I consider I've gotten through both of them on Faith Street. That's one of the reasons why I played the Steve Harvey bit on. On Faith Street. Okay. Let's see, before we open lines today, because like I say, it's the day after the, I guess it's up around Jacksonville now, northern Florida. I don't know if it's going to you know, hit over into, what do you call it, Georgia. Supposed to, though. So all I know is it's not in this neck of the woods. And I had to look at the hurricane tracker. No, what else is there in the Atlantic? And where is that headed? We don't need a double whammy. But hurricane season, somebody suggested that I take a 2-month vacation every year, September, October, when there's hurricane season. But the thing is, that sounds good, but if you got property in a hurricane zone, you know, you still need to take precautions. All right, we'll be back in 2 minutes.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great. Well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Hey, Bobby, why do you like soul food?
Because it makes me happy.
That's the piece like you used to say. That's the piece like you used to say. That's the piece like you used to say. That's the piece like you used to say.
We'll be right back.
A lot of grass, Oh Lord, I popped a lot of pills. But I've never touched nothing that my spirit could kill. You know I've seen a lot of people walking around with tombstones in their eyes. But the butcher don't care. Ah, if you live or if you die. God damn, the pusher.
of the day, and it's open mic today. Open mic. We had a hurricane that passed through this part of Florida. It was in the state 24 hours ago, and it got to my neck of the woods here in the afternoon. And wasn't bad. It rained most of the night, not heavy rain. With a few gusts here and there. Where I'm at, the house is intact. The roof is intact. The only damage we had here, and I'm just happy or ecstatic about the house, the primary house of Inner Roof. That was left unscathed. But the carport, some branches broke off of a tree, the next to a neighbor's tree, and fell on the carport, which was no surprise in the weight of that with the rain. So we're going to scrap that and see if we can recover some money of that, and then we'll build another carport later. I would like to do a carport that's got solar panels on it, but it can't be. We'll do another carport, but without solar panels. We can build a carport that will act as a your own personal electric company. But more on that later. So we got some people. So anyway, the electricity never went off here, but there were 30,000 customers in town that did have the electric cut off. And that's about 30% of the town. So 70%, I guess, you know, I don't know what the population is. I guess it's around about 100,000, so 30,000. That's about 30%. Not bad. And I think 24 hours ago, somewhere about like that, about 1 million people had no power. But we had power the whole way. Now, I believe Hurricane Ian is probably up somewhere around Jacksonville, Florida, I guess, about now. And it's supposed to be going on into Georgia, southern Georgia. So anyway, I'll pick back up on it later, but all I know is it came here and is out. So thankful for that. Now, some people, I mentioned the term reset housing. I didn't go into explanation of what it was, but we had somebody online that if they want to break down what reset housing is, they can press 1. Because some people will need reset housing. And or any topic that you want. Social question of the day. Now, like I said, we just had Hurricane Ian that passed through and caused some destruction. Here's the question of the day. Who causes more destruction in society? Hurricanes, not tornadoes, but just hurricanes, because hurricanes, they only come a certain time of the year. Hurricanes or your local neighborhood drug pusher. Who causes more death and destruction? A hurricane or the pusher, as highlighted in those films, Superfly, and there are plenty of drug pusher movies out there. So anyway, ask the question today if you care to tackle it. Other than that, if you have any other projects, concerns, announcements, trending topics, just press 1 and let us know what you got. Mentally, I'm just still recovering from, wasn't much to recover from though, the Hurricane Ian, and I stayed up most of the night listening to the news. That's the first time I have listened. Yesterday was the first time, and then early this morning, up until about 4 o'clock or so, or 5 o'clock a.m., that's the first time in over 20 years, maybe 25 years, that I have listened to AM radio. That's the first time in 20 to 25 years or so that I've listened to AM radio that many hours. And the primary reason, the only reason why I listened was AM radio, when it comes to natural disasters or natural events in nature, hurricanes, tornadoes, storms, floods, and all that, AM radio I say is a go-to for many people. Except you don't have AM radio, you know. It still exists. You know, the market has shrunk considerably. Quite a few stations have gone out of business, but quite a few stations, but you do still have a number of stations that are still around. So that's another question today. Do you listen to traditional radio, AM, particularly AM radio? And if so, how often? Like for me, yesterday was the first time in well over 20 years that I listened to it. But they gave timely information, and they were, and you got it right where you live at. I mean, right in local. I knew what was going on locally all day yesterday. I mean, from shelters to closings to, you know, the governor came on at least twice of Florida and other officials. So, and that just came from, I don't even know the call letters. But it's right here where I'm at. In the same city. So, second question today is, do you listen to radio? And if so, I listened for the first time in 20-plus years. Now, I'm talking about for that many hours. Now, if I leave the house to go shopping or something like that or run an errand, I got a dog here, so the dog doesn't like to be left alone. So I'll cut it on for the dog. But yesterday was the first time in, like, say, 20-plus years that I purposely cut it on to get news and information. I wasn't interested in any type of music. And that's what they gave. They gave you a lot of news and information. So I had it on about, at least 15, maybe 20 hours. Because I went to sleep and was playing it. So anyway, if you, your thoughts or concerns on that. In any event, once again, it's open mic trending topics. The only thing that was on my mind was getting through that storm. So we got through it on this, and it looks like the sun is trying to peek its head out. Topics that we covered earlier in the week were Black Townships 2.0. There are Black Townships that exist in the United States. We've covered that many times, but the new towns that are popping up as well, Freedom, Georgia. Then there's another one in Georgia. And Freedom, Georgia has got like 502 acres now. It's legally classified as a settlement and started with 19 families. Then there's another. Now, they call themselves Freedom Georgia, and their Facebook channel, not Facebook channel, their brand is Freedom Georgia. So if you type in any searches in Freedom Georgia Initiative, you'll get their website. On their YouTube is simply Freedom Georgia. Then there's another group, and some of the people live, there's 12 of them. And I think it's just 12 individuals, not 12 families, but 12, I believe, 12 individuals. They collectively bought 110 acres. So we called that podcast Black Townships 2.0 because it seems like there's a resurgence, or put it that way, a trend of small groups of Black people getting together here in the United States and building, starting their own townships and running them organizing communities the way they want to do it. And let's see. There's 145 minutes away from me, but let's see. Eatonville, Florida. Let's see if we can find something on that in case you don't know about Eatonville. And okay. Internet service might be slow in this area. They also brought to this area yesterday temporary, towers for, you know, cell phone communication or internet communication. So I don't know if you guys could hear Eatonville. Okay. All right. I can't hear anything on this, and I'm assuming you might not be able to hear it on your end. Well, we'll see. 410 of them.
Hello and welcome to History Pod. On the 4th of September 1882, Thomas
the hunger or the desire for people.
Okay, let me see. All right, 410, your mic is open.
Good morning, Brother LA. How you doing?
I'm fine. Trying to get control of this. Anyway, go ahead. I don't hear anything on my end, but I mean, I hear you, but I had another. Anyway, forget about that. Anyway, how are you doing?
Well, I'm doing okay. The storm is supposed to be moving up the coast my way. We're getting some sprinkles. But the main thing is you were able to get through it without any major damage, huh?
Yeah, no, other than a car report, and I don't consider that major. You know, we'll scrap that and sell the metal, and then I'll build a new one.
I figured you was going to be all right, you know. We're over here on the coast where we get flooding and the wind both at the same time, so we really get hammered over here on the coast. But I figure by you being inland, the only thing you probably have to worry about would be wind damage.
Well, now, I understand it hit, the brunt of this for this particular town hit in the northern part of town. You know, I haven't taken time to, you know, read where it hit the most around here, but because I know there were 30,000 customers without power. But everybody around this little subdivision, you know, we all had power. So now I talked to Viata. Now, Viata's up in Orlando, which is about 45 minutes or an hour away from where I'm at. So but when she was on, she went to another part of Florida. Well, so when I spoke to her this morning briefly, they had no power. So now I guess it's up around Jacksonville or southern Georgia. Well, when do you expect to hit the North Carolina coast, if at all?
Say that again.
North Carolina, the coast up at least, if at all.
Probably tomorrow sometime because the forecast is 100% rain. So we'll probably be getting some of it tomorrow and most definitely Saturday.
Okay.
But where I'm at, we'll just more or less get some wind and some rain. That's probably all we'll get because it's over on the, it looks like it's projected to be over close to between the Piedmont section, which is Raleigh's area, and the mountain area, which is over in the Charlotte area, so it'll probably be, that's the route that it'll probably be taking going north.
I got a question. Forget about those other questions. The late Dick Gregory and probably others said that hurricanes travel the path of slave ships. Now, and he said, you know, if you follow the path of hurricanes, and they hit Florida where you had a lot of slavery, Georgia where you had a lot of slavery, Mississippi, Alabama, Louisiana, and Texas, all those places were slave states. My new question of the day is, what are your thoughts on that, of slave or hurricanes, and they originate out of West Africa. So my question is, what are you guys' thoughts on that?
Have you seen the currents that exist in the Atlantic Ocean?
No, I have not, but I'll look it up though.
Yeah, what happens is currents are like rivers, in the ocean, rivers on land.
Okay.
And I guess because of the oceans rotating, you know, the way it rotates, it creates
right.
those currents in the oceans. And what happens is if you look at those currents, it starts in West Africa, and it comes on over by the Caribbean, parts of South America and the Caribbean, and it hits the Gulf Stream and come on up the coast, because the Gulf Coast comes all the way up.
Yeah, sailors knew that back then, too, I imagine.
Yeah, and, you know, there's writings says that the Africans used to hit those currents right off the West Coast, and it used to bring them right on up to the Western Hemisphere. The Polynesians used that type of current system too, because it was showing. I saw a television documentary one time that showed the Polynesians coming all the way from the Polynesian and Melanesian Islands, and it would bring them right on up to the California coast. They didn't need wind or anything else, very little wind, and that current would just carry them right on up to the western coast of South America and North America. And the same exists there on the eastern side of South America and North America, with the currents coming from Africa to this way over here. That's why when I hear Pianca talking, you know, I don't say anything, but the thing is, Ivan Van Sertum proved that Africans was traveling back and forth over here way before the Europeans even noticed this area of the earth existed.
Right.
But if you can't pull it up, I'll send it to you. I'm driving right now, but I'll send it to you whenever I get to stop.
Hurricane Atlantic current path. Okay, map.
Mm-hmm. And there's several different currents that's on the Atlantic side and the Pacific side.
Okay.
Or if you type in ocean currents and see if it'll bring it up, if you Google it.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing right now. It's the service is running kind of slow since this storm.
It's probably knocked down a lot of towers. Either damaged a lot of towers, huh?
Yeah, they say they bought in temporary tires. They had planned that in advance.
But those ancient people knew a lot. Well, the ancient people was closer to the earth and nature, so they had a way of picking up on things like that, whereas we've gotten away from it, really. And I've heard Dick Gregory say that, too.
Well, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I can't dispute it because the Gulf Stream comes all the way up from the tip of South America all the way over to England. So what happens is that's the one thing that keeps the eastern coast where I live at from getting snow, because it's a flow of warm water coming up from the south. And
right.
It goes all the way up to the over to England. So I have, you know, in fact, weather people have said that. So I can't dispute it because science says it's true.
Right. It is not coming
because
up on my plane. It's got to be the towers. It's got to be the towers because I got T-Mobile service and that typically runs quick. But
uh-huh.
I have, it's not, let me try one another time. Ocean current.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, in fact, a lot of people say it's the slaves getting revenge on the Western Hemisphere for going ahead on putting us in slavery when a hurricane hits. But, hey, look, that hurricane, when it comes over here, it damages everybody. So I can't use that one.
It doesn't discriminate.
No, it doesn't discriminate. But hey, I didn't know you'd heard that before.
Yeah, I heard it years ago when he was, you know, alive. But you know, why should it discriminate though? Because it's wiping out what was colonized.
That's right. Hey.
That's what it's doing.
Well, you know, some people always come up with some theories, you know, that facts don't support. But, you know, the one thing that facts do support.
You can't prove it. But it's interesting. That it's flowing out of the west coast of Africa.
Yeah, and then a certain conditions because a lot back when the sands of the Sahara blew over here one time, and it was a lot of dust in the air. And what happened is it traveled all the way from the Sahara Desert over to here. So with that being the case, and then with the Earth, circling the sun in a circle of motion, I mean, it's got to be a fact that those currents exist. But I'm getting ready to stop. I'm going to send you that map if you can receive it.
I know I'll be able to receive it. I might not be able to read it right away because, like I say, it looks like the service is running slow. So, and that's because of, you know, like I say, they have temporary tires here. So, although I've been very fortunate here. I'm just blessed also, not only the electric, but that's on, but I do get enough signal here so I can do the podcast. But pulling up maps and all that, or videos, I mean, for right now, because it was running great a couple of hours ago.
Oh, well, you know, depending on the circumstances, we have outages like that here.
Right.
But you're just blessed that you didn't have more damage than you had, you know.
Oh, yeah, you're right about that.
Is this your first?
You know, another thing I was thinking about yesterday when it was happening, I'm thinking, you know, some people, you know, there was shelters open here statewide, but some people caught without shelter. They didn't have a place to stay. They didn't have a car, no kind of vehicle. And they just had to rough it maybe in the woods or under a bridge or someplace. So I'm fortunate I didn't get caught like that.
Well, you from the conversations I heard you and Pianchi are having, you were pretty much prepared for it. So, regardless of what happened,
not as prepared as I should be or need to be. One thing I want to do is he mentioned something, and I was talking to a high school friend of mine about that. Is have they have these prepper meals. Where all you do is, you know, add water or something like that, and you're good to go.
We had those.
Or if, the, you know, the grocery stores are run on the grocery store, you know, once again, these prepper, you know, meals, and they got them, like, you know, you can get them like 3 months worth of supplies, stuff like that.
We had those
now,
in the
my
military.
My mother was a prepper. My mother was a prepper. They didn't call her that back then, but she was a prepper.
Mm-hmm. Well, she was way ahead of her time.
We
used to have those in the military. You just we had those old style canteens that was metal where you canteen holders. And what we do is we'd create a fire. We had these packets where you could create a blue flame.
Uh-huh.
They use
like
them in
Sterno?
The restaurant.
Yeah,
yeah Sterno.
Sterno.
Yeah. 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 And what we do is we get the water boiling and we pour it in a plastic. It was vacuum wrapped in a thick plastic bag. And what would happen is we put our hot water in there, and those suckers was delicious.
Good.
They're very good. They beat the regular K rations that we were first getting. And they come in all sorts of meals. You know, you'd have your vegetables in one pack. You've had your meats in one pack. And you could come out with a darn good meal. This guy named Jim Baker, he was representing the company. And, he was one of them preachers that was trying to finance his broadcast.
Oh, you're talking about Jim Baker that used to be married to Tammy Faye Baker?
That's the same one. That's the same one.
Yeah, I remember him.
Well, what he was selling on his broadcast, I don't know if he still does it or not because I don't watch it anymore. He would give you a month supply, and you pay so much for it. They come in plastic containers, and they had the dehydrated rice and green beans, all types of vegetables and meats. And the thing is, he was saying, you know, the end time is coming and you want to be prepared and you can store those suckers up for years.
Right.
And the thing is, it was just the same thing as we used to get in the Army, but, you know, he was selling them to finance his broadcast and pad his pockets. But a lot of people, especially white people, have stacks and stacks of those types of meals that you and I are talking about.
Right.
And I think at the time he was selling them for about $107 a bucket, but it will last you, some of them will last you about 6 months to a year because he felt like if America ever came under attack or come under attack, you could get under a shelter and you could last that long. And he had different types with different meals and things. And it would be a good thing for people in your area, but in my area where there's flooding, it wouldn't do us any good to stack it up because the water would get in and destroy those types of containers that, well, it wouldn't destroy them, but it just wouldn't be feasible for us to do it unless we had a place where we could store it on our land, you know, because it floods in there. You know, you have to be prepared.
I got the text, but it's power situations over this way. I can't convert nothing. Yeah, so I'll watch it. I mean, look at it later. But that's good to hear that those meals taste good.
Oh yeah, no doubt, and they last a long time. I mean, we had some that have been packed away for years. And the thing is, it was just like they had put them in the package the day before we got them. And that's the advantage of it, because it's dehydrated, and all you have to do is to bring it back to form is to add hot water to it.
Okay.
Well,
but, I know they sell a bunch of them on different day websites, or you can buy them on, Amazon.
Yeah. And if
I
ever
think they got these things called MREs, meals ready to eat.
Yeah, MREs,
Yeah.
I don't know how the Army got onto it, but the thing is, it was a big improvement over the sea rations that we used to get. Those things was nasty, you know.
Yeah, you got to eat those out in the field, I guess.
Yeah. And the MREs was, you could carry more of them than you could the sea rations.
Okay.
Because, like I said before, they were dehydrated and they were vacuum packed, which meant, you know, they didn't take up a lot of space and you could carry more bullets.
Mm-hmm.
But that's something that we really, like I was talking to you, what was it, the day before or yesterday. Those are classes that we in the hood needs to have.
Definitely.
And we used to educate people on what it's going to take to survive, because you never know when there might be a downturn in the economy, and the way the United States is in conflicts and the way Putin is talking about using nuclear weapons if the United States intervene into
Ukraine. Yeah.
The Ukraine, you know, you never know how things might turn out, because I'm going to say this, Brother L.A., and if you got any other listeners listening, see, the white man is not going to quit meddling with each other until somebody uses nuclear weapons. I mean, that's just the way it is. And Putin has already said that he's not against using them if Western powers interfere with his business. So I believe Putin is just crazy enough to do it.
He has said that.
Yeah. And I believe he's crazy enough
believe,
to do it.
I agree. He's bold enough to use them, too.
Yeah. And look, I don't put it against any president, American president, using them. I'm going to just be honest with you, because regardless of whether it's Putin or somebody else, all of them is blessed with the same mentality. You know, if they use it in Japan and they feel like they're losing, I believe it's not above them to go in and just go ahead on and do that. You know, and if people want to call me on.
Yeah, Truman dropped 2 on Japan. And now the nuclear weapons are more powerful.
That's right. That's right.
Than the ones that dropped on it. And the ones that were dropped in Japan, they were very powerful. But man. Well, next question is, where's the safe place to live on the planet, or at least the United States, if Putin decides to launch one? I figure D.C., New York City, I figure your major cities in the United States will be the absolute worst places to be.
Well, you know D.C. is going to get hit. I mean,
yep. D.C., just like with 9/11. You know, they hit D.C.
Right.
or right outside of D.C. And they hit Manhattan, New York.
That's right. And look. Where I live at, there's a lot of military bases. So I'm right, the bulls are right in my area.
And they know where every military base is, too.
That's right. So I know that, I'm at ground zero. And all of your financial centers are going to be hit. Like you say, Wall Street, The commodities
Wall Street,
market.
Well, you may as well go in Chicago. The Chicago Board of Trade, that covers the Midwest. And then
right.
whatever they have out there on the West Coast, which is what, San Francisco, L.A., those two places, definitely.
That's right. That's right. So I don't know if there is a safe place now unless you go out there where those black folks bought that land at out there in Montana, where it's open country and there's no well, I'll take that back.
Yeah,
you know, you got those
Where the population is low. Montana, Wyoming, the Dakotas, maybe Minnesota, places like that.
And you're going to have to pick your spots there because you know they got missile silos in those areas.
Yeah, that's true. And,
so,
and the enemy
I don't
knows
know.
Where all those places are.
Yeah, so I don't know. You know, the temptation said that the only safe place to live was on an Indian reservation, so they might be right, you know.
You're right. You might, you're probably right. Yeah, they, and they know about how the Indians were, how they were dogged out.
That's
so
right.
They'll leave
and
them alone.
Yeah, because there's nothing of interest there. But my thing is this here. Even if you don't get hit by the blast, the radiation, poisoning from the radiation is going to get you all in the that's in the air. So I don't know. You got me on that.
And then how far is that radiation travel?
I don't know. I know they used to have tests.
The kill blast, the blast zone?
Something
you know, that
like
can
that.
Reach out, that can reach out several miles. And you're right, the radiation that lasts for years.
That's right.
That radiation, it still exists in... Nagasaki was one of those places, or Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
That's right.
They have those places recovered. I don't know.
Yeah, they did. But now, even with those places, some people survived.
Yeah,
believe it or not, some
people
survived
out.
In those areas. So I guess it's just the luck of the draw. You know, I guess if you're lucky enough, you can make it. If you, you know, if you're surrounded by God, that's all I can say, because some people in those areas did survive.
Well, I don't know. There's a famous picture. I know you've seen it. Somebody dropped a napalm bomb or whatever in Vietnam, and it burnt. I mean, she's a grown woman. I think she's still living. Burnt the clothes off of her back, and she was running. The picture caught her running naked. But it happened over in Vietnam, and I think it came from napalm. They got some depth to show. Now, hold it. I got a map. I got an ocean currents map, bro, Beasley.
You see it?
Yeah. Let me
the scientists say those are like rivers in the ocean.
Right.
And for people that's smart enough to navigate it, they don't have to use power to have it go wherever they need to go, you know. So
I'm looking at West Africa right now.
Uh-huh.
Or I'm looking at one that emanates out of West Africa. And then goes over to Brazil and over to the Caribbean. Then it's one that goes opposite of that.
And
then
it's
a circular one.
Yeah, if you look at one of those currents, it takes you right to Hispaniola, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, let me give you this one. And I know that you might have some naysayers, but wasn't it African navigators that got Columbus over in this area?
Yeah.
So now it's not beyond them to know where those currents were.
Oh yeah, I'm sure they know about it.
Yeah, but Dick Gregory said it, and I wouldn't say it's not true. I'll put it that way.
Right.
You know. But look, let me switch gears on you. Since we're talking about maps, did you see that map I sent you showing the location of Soul City?
And let me go back to that. Yeah, on 5,000 acres.
Yeah. I sent you a text with the map showing you all of those towns that were surrounded by Soul City and the transportation routes that it was located towards, that it was located near.
Okay, wait a minute. I'm trying to pull up what you're talking about.
I'm going to get it.
I'm still not pulling up. I was able to finally pull up those ocean current maps.
Oh, okay.
I'm trying to pull up some of the other stuff you sent me, and it's still running slow.
Oh, okay. Well, the thing is, it showed where the guy said it was 1.5 hours from Raleigh. And Raleigh's only 30 miles from, Durham's only 30 miles from Raleigh. And all of those major metropolitan areas is in that vicinity. And the thing is, I didn't think about it, but I don't know if you've heard of these little small towns or not, Rocky Mount and Wilson.
Hey, I've heard of Rocky Mount and Wilson.
Yeah,
I've heard
Grain,
both.
Yeah, Grainville.
I haven't heard of that one. Not in North Carolina.
Okay, Rocky Mount, North Carolina.
I've heard of Wilson, yeah.
And Grainville, where the East Carolina University is.
Okay.
Well,
yeah,
what
I've heard
happened
of East
is...
East Carolina University. I've heard of that, yeah.
Well, now, all of those have very large black populations. And you and
okay.
I was talking about the 5,000 acres, and if you could get industry in there, it would change the whole economic situation in that area. I mean, it would take care of a lot of problems if it was well funded that
mm-hmm.
a whole lot of black people are facing in those populated areas. And the thing is, I don't know whether, now I can't say this, but you know what? Other people see opportunities when we don't.
True.
And a lot of people always plan in a 50-year period. That's how far out they plan. We don't plan
that far out.
You gotta
do that, yeah.
Yeah, we don't do that, but they do. And the thing is, if Soul City had been able to survive and General Motors had put a plan in there and Miller Brewing Company and other companies had put industry in there, that would have changed the complexion of that whole area. And plus you got the southern part of Virginia that it touched too. That's a rural area. I didn't even look at the towns on that side of the border. But that would have been... He projected, McKissick projected that it would be the size of a 50,000 people city. That's a pretty good size city.
With 5,000 acres, you're right.
Yeah, yeah. And you still would have had enough room that they wouldn't have been cramped.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
And he had projected that, hey, look, it would be set up in a way where those people wouldn't have to travel. They could just walk to their jobs or ride a bicycle or what have you to go wherever those factories would be set up. So all I'm saying is Senator Jesse Helms, along with the white think tanks of that era, they aren't fools. And they knew that that would have empowered a lot of black people in those areas. Now, this is just me thinking.
Right.
Based on what I know about them. But you had everything there. You had two interstate highways. You had a rail system going through there. And plus, you also had in close access to an airport. And you had a close, it was closely located to the Norfolk Seaport, the Moorhead Seaport, and the Wilmington Seaport.
Okay.
So it had everything going for it. I don't know. I can't say why the government didn't see this and why it wouldn't have been something if they wanted to help black folk. It would have been something for them to invest in. But you know the rest of the story. But the thing is, L.A., and it's still doable. You know, you and I talk about this all the time. With 5,000 acres of land, you got opportunity to do a lot of stuff.
Quite a bit.
And it's still under those people's control. But if you don't have the vision, if you don't have the vision, then you can't see it. You know, now you see it. I see it. But the people with the money in our community, I don't think they're interested in it. In fact,
if we go to some of these black churches, not all black churches, not all black pastors, but the handful that I've talked to and at close range, it's, you know, and this was a case in Baltimore where the pastor had a little storefront church. She had a pretty good following. But all she saw was, you know, a parking lot. Let's get some land. And there's a place for that, but, you know, why not develop? I mean, why not develop that, those lots? Even she could have housing and a parking lot. But a lot of them, like Creflo Dollar with the $65 million Gulfstream jet or what have you. You know, how about have, you know, one of the ideas for that would be that jet stream or whatever he wanted to get for $65 million. You know, you can do a whole lot with $65 million, but you realize how much land you can buy for for $3 million. Okay. But, you know, have access, instead of just him having access to the jet, okay, have that jet available for the congregation. Anyway, but his church, his congregation, they do what they want to do.
Brother L.A., there's one point you're missing. He was able to raise it. He was able to.
Well,
that's just like a politician going out there and asking for campaign funds.
Right.
Creflo Dollar was able to raise the $65 million to pay for that plane cash. So now, if you got the ability to do that, and your mind and your head is screwed on right, you could change the world with that type of ability. A whole lot of politicians can't raise that much money.
Well, you're right.
So now, and look, I'm going to give you this. I bet you 35% of the people in his congregation are renting.
Yep.
At least. So now, if he just put up, like you said, look, you don't even have to go out in a rural area. He could buy city blocks and put up condominiums.
He could have gone into Atlanta. I haven't been in Atlanta, but you're right. He can go to Atlanta, which is right near him, and buy, like you said, city blocks.
And put up housing for those people and put them on Section 8 And not only would it pay for the airplane, it will pay for, look, it will pay for 4 or 5 airplanes.
Right.
And look, don't even mention if you put a grocery store in there and drug stores and things that people need. I mean,
now, you know what? Now, you know what? Every, particularly with his big congregation, you know, they're going to be shopping for Sunday, just Sunday dinner revenue alone. Buy it from your local store, church supported store.
Brother L.A., all he has to say is, we got, look, this is our community here. We build it. God told us to build it. Everything you need is right here. God has supplied all of our needs. And if you need your groceries, you need some clothes, you need medicine, or you need medical care, whatever what you need, God has given this to us. And it's a wrap. See, when God says something that, when they say God told them something, see, I mean, it's a wrap with our people. But all
yeah,
he was
right.
interested in was them airplanes.
That's it.
All he had to say, God told me to do this. Because God told him he needed an airplane, didn't he?
He must have. That's what they
that's
always
what he
say.
Said.
What do you call it? Oral Roberts, many years ago. I don't even think he's living anymore. But Oral Roberts said if he didn't get a, if he didn't raise a certain amount of money, God was going to take him home.
I didn't send him a damn cent. I wanted God to take him.
He raised the money.
He said that at the last minute.
I don't think, what's his name? Robert Shula?
Uh-huh.
Robert Shula. I don't think he said nothing as far-fetched, but he was on the borderline of it.
Yeah. But look, have you seen those mega churches that they build?
Oh, yeah. Freyer Prices. Let's see. What's that guy down in Texas? Osteen. Joel Osteen.
Yeah. Those facilities take a lot of... Huh?
Those things are—they're like stadiums.
They are
arenas.
Stadiums.
Yeah.
And they got parking lots. They got parking spaces surrounding them.
Right.
So now you tell me, if you can raise money to build something like that, you can be. Look, you're talking about the people in Freedom, Georgia. Hell, when you can take up enough money to do what these people do at mega churches and the land that it takes to build mega churches on, hell, you could build a whole lot of small towns.
You're right.
But when your mind is screwed up and you're selfish just for self, I mean, that's why all people suffering, Brother L.A.
Yeah, you're right. God told me to get a Rolls Royce.
Yeah.
Oh, what about that pastor about a couple of months ago that got robbed? He got robbed. I think he and his wife got robbed for $1 million worth of jewelry during the church service.
You took it right out of my mouth. I was thinking about it as we were talking. And look, Brother L.A., have you seen that church?
No, I saw the guy preach a little bit, but I haven't seen the outside of the church.
It's a hole in the wall in Brooklyn.
So he's wearing more jewelry than what the building's worth.
Exactly. But now, look, the people in that church is buying that jewelry, buying his fancy cars and suits, and buying his house in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
Now, while I was in New York, I had to go and look at it because I wanted to see what it looked like.
Right.
And my aunt took me down there where it was at. It's just a hole in the wall. And he's able to do all of that with that type of lifestyle with those members that he has.
Mm.
So now, like you said before, we ain't got to wait on the government. All we need to do is just criticize the government. But look, we got enough money if it's managed right, and we have our people's needs in mind. Look, it's over. Poverty is gone. Sickness is gone. And look, as far as power and control, we'd have it all. And look, maybe it's a far-fetched dream that I have, but I'm just saying. Hey, look, the money that they take up every Sunday.
I like that idea of the grocery store. That's very, very practical because we're all going to eat anyway. So instead of going to Whole Foods or Piggly Wiggly or Albertson or whatever you got in your neck of the woods, have a church grocery store that not only serves the members of the church, but serves the community as well.
You could get everybody's money.
Yep.
Everybody. But look, Brother L.A., I don't know how the stores are set up where you are. I've seen this in Baltimore, and I've seen it in North Carolina. And I definitely seen it in Walmart. Have you ever heard of a Super Fresh?
Oh, yeah. There was one right outside of D.C. I used to go to until they moved. Right in Chilham, Maryland, or Hyattsville, Maryland. But I haven't been stepped inside of one of those in at least 20 years, though.
Well, you know, I just picked that one right off the top of my head. When I got out of when I retired from federal service, I used to have my wife operating the store,
mm-hmm.
And I think I told you the story. I went to a temporary hiring service and got on, and the guy told me, said, "Well, look, brother, why are you doing that? Why don't you come on and work with us?" You know, he worked for Nabisco, and his job was to stock the stores with new products and, you know, just put up advertisement and things for Nabisco. It was a marketing service. And I went to a Super Fresh store, and it had a bank in it. It had a pharmacy in it. And it had a place where you could do your what do you call these Western Unions? It had a financial center and everything.
Right, MoneyGram, Western Union, that type thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and look, this Walmart where I'm at now, it has a place where they sell prescription eyeglasses. One time they had a place, a beauty parlor in it. So a grocery store can house several different businesses under one roof.
One of the ones I go to, matter of fact, both of them that I primarily go to, both of them have a pharmacy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Both of them have a bakery. So,
that's right. Yeah, I didn't even mention a bakery. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them you can get cooked food.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, because if you want a rotisserie chicken for man, you can go to Walmart now and get that. I mean, not all Walmarts, but certain ones, like the Super Walmarts, you can go in there and get you a rotisserie chicken hot, ready to eat right then.
That's right. You can get chicken wings, hot wings.
Yeah, chicken wings, yeah. All kind of salads, all kind of desserts. A lot of people, they go to a Walmart or, like I said, the two grocery stores near me. You can get lunchtime, if you want to pick up your lunch, be it hot or cold, it's there. If you want to pick up some on the way home for dinner, it's hot, ready to go.
But you see where we're going at with this.
Mm-hmm.
All of these churches are located in food deserts.
You're right.
All of these churches got cooking sisters in there that can cook with the best of them.
You're right. Oh, some
you
of
got...
them, the grocery stores and Walmart that we're talking about, some of them cook for those places.
That's right. That's right.
So they cook for the Asians with the Chinese food joints. And then, oh, here's an idea. Real simple. There's a lot of people, because, you know, since the pandemic, I guess it's over with now, I don't know. But a lot of people start to go back to church. Bible study. You can sell dinner, have dinners, sell dinners, go in there. You want to pick it up on the way home, or do you want to take it with you on the way out of Bible study? Friday night church service, same thing. Now, I think we talked about this before. The United House of Prayer for All People, they sell hot meals.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Brother L.A., people are looking at us and say, you know what? Those people are idiots. They
yeah.
are complete. Now, look, let me give you a story just to show you how messed up we are. My wife and I used to go to a church-owned restaurant here in town.
Uh-huh.
And everybody was going to that place. He had a top-notch chef in there that, I mean, it was all you could eat joint. And these
mm-hmm.
people that worked in his kitchen under that guy.
Okay.
And what happened is everybody went there. In fact, a lot of preachers used to go there. I mean, you couldn't get in there for preachers and church folk and white folk.
Right.
And one Sunday, my wife and I wanted to ride out. She wanted to go and pick up some things and everything. So she said, look, I don't feel like cooking. Why don't we go over to, well, his name was Reverend Brown. We knew him personally.
All right.
Why don't we go over to Reverend Brown's restaurant and have dinner, because I don't feel like cooking. I said, that's
right.
a good idea. Went there, and the place was closed. So I said, darn, you know, seemed like the place would be open on a Sunday. Maybe he's having a special program or something. So we went back there. He wasn't there. But the waitress was there. And I asked, I said, look, we were here one Sunday afternoon. We wanted something to eat. And
right.
You guys closed. She said, well, yeah, we close on Sundays. I said, you close on Sundays? I said, that's where
man,
your business
this
is.
Death day.
And look, he was over three churches in the area. And I said, well, look like, you know, he's got a building customer base just with his members alone. She said, yeah, I know that. She said, Brother Beasley, I know that. But he said that he made a promise with God that if he ever blessed him to have a business, that he would not open that business on Sundays. I say, well, wait a minute. If God blessed him to have the business, I'm quite sure God would want him to feed his people. She said, Brother Beasley, you and I know that. Say, but that's what he said. So I said, you know what I'm asking? She said, you ask him. Say, I'm not lying on him. So I did see him. And
mm-hmm.
I said, Reverend Brown, you know, I said, we came here one Sunday and your place was closed, man. My wife was hungry and we wanted to get something one
right.
Sunday afternoon. He said, yeah, you're right. He said, but I promised God that if he blessed me to get in business, that I would not operate a business on Sundays, on his day. I said, well, look, I went out to Golden Corral and all of your members was out there eating. I said, God didn't stop their appetite because they at Golden
well,
Corral.
Know, like Golden Corral, they might not go out of business, but if they were closed on Sunday, it would hit them financially. They might
That's
not
right.
go bankrupt, but they would take a hit.
That's right, a big hit. Because
yeah,
Reverend
so
Brown
right after Sunday service, people all
yeah.
over are going to Golden Corral or Country Crock or Bob Evans, you know, even IHOP.
Yeah. I told him, I said, well, look, all of your members was at Golden Corral the same Sunday. God didn't stop the appetite. He said, yeah. He said,
right.
you know what? He said,
He said, yeah, they can eat there if they want to, but I ain't going to open up on God's day. And guess what?
Mm.
6 months later, the nigga was out of business.
Yeah, because I'm looking at, like, with the, I don't know the finance of the United House of Prayer for All People, but I imagine they take, because there's like 143 of those in the nation. I imagine they probably take in more off selling food than they take in tithes and offerings.
L.A.
I don't know, but I'm just guessing.
L.A., look, they've been in business for a long time, haven't they?
Yeah, they've been in business, and that started off with Sweet Daddy Grace?
That's right. And look, the guy told me in Baltimore, he said, if they want to go in business, all they have to do is go to their overseer, tell them what they want to do. He opened up a funeral home there in Baltimore. And he said, what? I went overseer and asked, told him what I wanted to do, and we got the money. He said, we didn't even have to go to the bank. He said, because our overseer wants us to participate in commerce. That's what he told me. And I told you right across the street from, what's the name of that university? White University. No, it's a white university. What's the name of it?
Up in Baltimore, John Hopkins.
Across the street from John Hopkins, the United House of Prayer got a shopping center with a grocery store, clothing store, and a pharmacy.
That's a good neighborhood, too.
Yeah, and look, John Hopkins built a housing project right across the street from it.
Yeah, I think that John Hopkins might be the biggest private employer in Baltimore City.
It's one of the biggest, that's for sure.
Yeah, if it's not the, it is one of the biggest. You're right.
But House of Prayer got a shopping center right across the street from that university, the old campus.
Okay.
And you can find black folks in there left and right. Now, I don't know whether they were all the United House of Prayer people or not, but when we used to go in there to reorganize it and restock it and everything, the business was there. But the United House of Prayer owned all of it. So now that tells you something.
Yeah.
Some denominations aren't crazy. So...
No, they're a quiet little, you don't hear much about them, but they're doing well for themselves.
Yeah, and their people
they're
doing
well. Well for themselves. And like I said,
they pay money.
Go ahead, I'm listening.
But you and I are just sitting here talking now, we don't have a nickel in that quarter. We can see the goal, and you don't have to go to heaven to get there. But the people that's got the goal, they're looking towards heaven and making sure that they get what they want, and the rest of the people just, they're just sheep that they're fleecing, that's all. Because, look, Brother L.A., there's no excuse for a food dozen to be in our neighborhoods with all of them churches on every corner.
You're right.
Well, that's
what I think with this, with Freedom Georgia and other people, small groups of black people putting together, they're doing what a lot of these churches, and I think that might be a trend. I don't know how to measure it yet, but people getting together like a small group. And because, like I said, the idea that you had with having a grocery store or even a farmer's market, a farmer's market is like low risk, And, well, anyway, I'm on 9% on this phone, so I'm going to log off here before we get kicked out or before my phone gets shut down. So
I'm glad you were able to.
We'll touch bases tomorrow. Well, tomorrow's Friday, is it? past week. Okay, I'm going to catch me a nap, too, because I was up all night.
Yeah, you need it. Yeah, you need it,
okay,
brother.
Talk,
so you.
All right, talk to you
I'll
later.
I'll see you tomorrow. All right.
Okay.